I'm waiting on those batteries. We're going to read from Matthew chapter 10. We're going to begin at verse 32. We'll read to verse 42, Matthew 10, where we'll start at verse 32 and then read to verse 42. Our text are the final verses, verses 40 through 42, the last three. So, Matthew 10, we'll begin at verse 32. Hear the word of God. Whoever acknowledges me before men, I will also acknowledge him before my Father in heaven. And whoever disowns me before men, I will disown him before my Father in heaven. Do not suppose that I have come to bring peace to the earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I have come to turn a man against his father, a daughter against her mother, a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. A man's enemies will be the members of his own household. Anyone who loves his father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and anyone who loves his son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And anyone who does not take his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. In other words of our text, he who receives you receives me, and he who receives me receives the one who sent me. Anyone who receives a prophet, because he is a prophet, will receive a prophet's reward. And anyone who receives a righteous man, because he is a righteous man, will receive a righteous man's reward. And if anyone gives even a cup of cold water to one of these little ones, because he is my disciple, I tell you the truth, he will certainly not lose his reward. As for the reading of God's holy word, again, our text are those final verses, the verses 40 through 42. Beloved congregation of our Lord Jesus Christ, for some within our fellowship, the darkness and dread of the days of the Second World War are not as distant a memory as they are for others. We have members who lived through those times, those really terrible times, especially terrible for anyone who was targeted by Germans for special punishment. Think about the Jews in particular, who were objects of German wrath. And more than just Jews, of course, many more found themselves on the trains to concentration camps. And German soldiers would stop at nothing in their efforts to find those undesirables, those who were, in the eyes of the German army, unworthy. The Diary of Anne Frank, of course, we know well, recounts the lengths that this family had to go through in order to avoid being found out by the Nazis. And just for a moment, I want us to enter into that context. I want to enter into that situation. I want us to try and imagine what it would be like to live during those dark days and to have to sit in your house absolutely quiet, fearing any unnecessary sound, worrying that any knock on the door could be a German soldier coming to mistreat you, coming to capture you and take you home. Can you imagine what kind of fear that would engender, what kind of terror that would work in the hearts of people and work in the hearts of even Christian families? Now imagine that it's not you who's hiding from the Germans. Now imagine it's your neighbor. Now imagine it's somebody from the town down the road. And now imagine the knock on the door is not a German soldier, but it's a Jewish family fleeing. It's a gypsy family hiding. It's a Christian family seeking protection. And now you have an opportunity to welcome this family in. They're standing on your doorstep asking you for help. What do you do? Sitting in our comfortable pews makes it difficult to appreciate the real challenge this situation would have been for those who lived through the Second World War. To take in such a family, to protect them, was to place your own life at risk. If the Nazis found out that you had been hiding fugitives, not only would the fugitives be sent off on one of those trains to nowhere, so would you and your wife and your children. It was no small risk then that you had to take if you were to hide someone from the Germans and from their cruelty. So what do? The question is not as strange as you might imagine. It is, of course, one particular expression of this challenge. But that challenge is what lies behind the verses of our text this afternoon. Just keep in mind, in Matthew 10, the Lord has been speaking to his disciples as they prepare to go out on the first missionary trip. And the words of Jesus to his disciples, they had been so good. They had started out so well. Jesus, you remember, had said to the people, pray to the Lord of harvest to send forth laborers into his vineyard. And then he had called his 12 disciples and he had given them, the passage says, the beginning of chapter 10 says, he had given them all authority to drive out all evil spirits and to heal every disease and sickness. But these men were now equipped to be like Christ in so many ways, to proclaim the good news of the kingdom and to demonstrate its power in the lives of these people. What a wonderful thing, what a remarkable thing, what a powerful testimony they would be bringing into the cities of Jerusalem, or into the cities rather of Israel, and then in time to the cities of the world. And yet, though the beginning of Jesus' message to these disciples was so encouraging and so wonderful to think about and to consider, very quickly the sermon, the speech that Jesus gives to his disciples turns dark. It becomes a word of caution and then a word of warning. Very early on, we hear that though, yes, these men were going to be sent to the lost sheep of Israel, there would be people that don't receive you. There will be people that don't welcome you into your homes, and then you're to wipe the dust off of your feet. And then it gets worse. Jesus says, I'm sending you out like sheep among wolves. And he explains to his disciples that because they represent him, because they serve in his ministry, because they're going forth in his work, they will necessarily face opposition. Anyone who lives for the Lord, anyone who gives their life to Christ will face division. Indeed, isn't that what we saw the last time we were in Matthew chapter 10? There we heard Jesus speak about the terrifying consequences of what it means to be a Christian in the context of the most intimate of all relationships, in the context of family. Jesus said those hard words, do not suppose that I've come to bring peace to the earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. And then he talks about the destruction of community. That the gospel, the grace of God, the message of salvation will turn a man against his father, a daughter against her mother, a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. A man's enemies will be the members of his own household. That's a terrifying thought. It's not one that we, in many circumstances, many of us, it's not one that many of us have to deal with. Our parents are Christians. Our in-laws are Christians. Our enemies are not found in our own household. They're found in this world. Although there are still some, also within our own fellowship, who understand something of what the Lord is saying here. That by committing to Jesus Christ and to living for Him, you are effectively saying goodbye to an old lifestyle, to an old community, to an old context. And that can be challenging. That was challenging for the early church. Believers that gave their life in answer to the call of Jesus Christ, but found themselves as a result without work, without social connections, without community, without any kind of social bond. And can you begin to appreciate? It's hard to. It's something we almost have to imagine, given the blessing that we enjoy as church. Can you begin to imagine how costly it was for believers to walk in the way of Jesus Christ? Think of all that they had to lose, the family and friends, the lifestyle they had to give up. We don't lose community as believers. But there are some, there are many in this world that know something of that. And they also come into our midst. They also pass through our doors, seeking to find that blessing, that connection, that community. And how should we then? What must we then do as God's people in this place? Well, Jesus tells us. He says, he who receives you receives me, and he who receives me receives the one who sent me. Now we're going to leave off the question of who is the you at the opening of this sentence. He who receives you. There are essentially two possibilities. There's a broad you, referring basically to all believers, and then there's a more narrow you, referring to the disciples. So Jesus could say, he who receives you, that is all Christians, receives me. Or he could be saying, he who receives the office bearers of the church, receives me. Now we're not going to decide that just yet. We'll take that up in a minute. Because we don't want to miss, first of all, the wonder of what Jesus here says. Whoever we think Jesus is speaking of, whoever Jesus is encouraging the church to receive, the basis, the bond that he offers as the reason to receive them is utterly profound. Whether it is an elder coming to our house for a family visit, a minister preaching the gospel to us, or whether it's a Christian that comes into our midst, a fellow believer, a fellow child of the Lord seeking the things of God within his word. Whoever it is that Jesus here speaks of, Jesus says to receive him is to receive me. And to receive me is to receive God himself. Think of it. Whoever it is you want to understand by the you, by receiving them, you receive Christ and indeed the Father himself. That's a remarkable blessing. That's an amazing grace. That is a motivation to receive that is out of this world. There are, of course, challenges that we face when it comes to receiving others, whether it is office bearers, whether it's fellow believers. And we need to be motivated, we need to be encouraged to be hospitable. We need to be encouraged to be respectful. It is not in our nature. It is not something we do easily. We don't listen to other people tell us what to do easily. We don't like to sacrifice our time, our gifts, our material wealth easily. And what Jesus is here asking us to do, indeed what he's asking in the context of this passage, is essentially sacrificial. Jesus is saying, you know, as a church, as fellow believers, you are going to be all alone. You will lose your community. Well, now, how do you recreate community? How do you recreate an environment in which all of these different, differing individuals can find a home? We find it very easy and comfortable, most of us, in a congregation like this. The ethnicity is very familiar to us. The culture is very familiar to us. It's very easy for us. We wonder why anybody can't get along with us. But now imagine that we would bring in all new, different immigrants, different people. Think about the Roman church that started as a Jewish synagogue, believing in Jesus Christ. And then it grew and these Gentiles came to faith. And there was this sudden influx of all of these Gentiles. And there came a time when the Jews were then kicked out. They were excommunicated, you might say, not from the church, but from Rome itself. And then in time they were able to return. But what had happened to the church? The Gentiles had taken over. And the Gentiles did things differently. The culture had changed. The ethnicity had changed. And now what? Well, now you get an entire letter to the church at Rome from the Apostle Paul. How do we deal with, how do we bring into, how do we embrace people that aren't Dutch? People that don't have soup on Sunday. People that don't know our songs. People that don't dress our way. Who come to worship here because they desire to hear and see the things of God. But are different than us. Very different than us. What basis, what bond do we have to give to them? They don't fit. At least not when we look through life, at life, through the lens of self. But now Jesus says, wait a minute, when you see that guest, that fellow worshiper come into the church, when you hear the word proclaimed, when the office bearer comes to your house, whoever it is that you're being called to receive, Jesus says, when you receive him, you receive me. And you receive my Father. He says, look beyond the individual. Look beyond that person, whoever they may be, whatever ethnicity they may be. And find your unity not in who they are, but in who their Lord is and who their Father is. Look beyond them. Look past them to see Jesus, to see the Father, and to say, I love them. I love Jesus, and I love the Father, and I'm going to welcome you into my home. I'm going to receive you and the word that you bring. I'm going to be in community with you because we are bound not by ethnicity, not by soup, but by salvation, by Jesus Christ. That's not an easy thing to do, to welcome, to receive authority, to receive others. There's a cost involved. There's a cost of time. Cost of your position or authority. It can even cost your life to welcome some into your home. And because it's so costly, we need to be encouraged. We need a reason to be selfless and sacrificial in our relationships with those whom Jesus sends into our lives. And truth be told, the motivation doesn't always come from the person that Jesus sends. Whether we're talking now again in terms of office bearers, or in terms of fellow believers, being receptive, being open, being welcoming to their word, to their work, to their presence in our lives. It's not that easy. And principally because like us, they're sinners. They're at times demanding, awkward, rude, offensive. If we receive people into our homes and into our lives because of how worthy they are, pretty quickly we're going to find good reason for kicking them out, for not listening to them, for not welcoming them, for not serving them. When we focus on the person that Jesus has sent, we're going to take a pass. Which is why Jesus says, don't focus on them, but focus on me. And focus on the Father. That's the wonder of Jesus' promise in this text. When we receive those whom Jesus sends, when we do it by faith and in service to Him, well, then we receive Jesus and the Father. That's amazing. That's a bond and a fellowship that we all ought to hold dear. Whether it's listening to a sermon, whether it's having a family visit, whether it's exercising Christian hospitality, when we receive those whom God sends to us, we receive God Himself. Now that's an encouragement to look past people's flaws and look to the Lord. Of course, there is an implicit warning attached to this. We noted it when we noted that there is this movement from receiving the stranger to receiving Jesus to receiving the Father. The implicit warning is this, that if you reject that stranger, if you reject the office bearer, if you reject the one whom God has sent into your life, well, then you also reject Jesus. Then you also reject the Father. I mean, that makes sense, doesn't it? Jesus was sent by the Father. So if you rejected Jesus, you rejected the Father. Think of the Pharisees. They couldn't stand before God at the end of time and say, "Well, God, we love you. We just had issues with your son." Well, the father would say, "If you don't love my son, you don't love me." And now Jesus is saying to us, if you do not welcome, if you reject, if you refuse those that I send to you, well, then you refuse and reject me. And then you refuse and reject the Father as well. And that makes this a serious business. That makes this an eternal business. And that makes understanding who we're called to receive a rather pressing question. If we are to receive the Father and the Son, we are to receive those whom He sends. So, who does He send? As we've already noted, there is typically a broad and a narrow answer. On the narrow side is office bearers, and on the broader side is all believers. So which is it? Well, Jesus goes on to say in verse 41, "Anyone who receives a prophet will receive a prophet's reward." That sounds like office bearers, doesn't it? "But anyone who receives a righteous man will receive a righteous man's reward." Maybe that's an office bearer. "And if anyone even gives a cup of cold water to one of these little ones, because he's my disciple," well, that's not an office bearer at all. I tell you the truth, he will certainly not lose his reward. Now, it is possible, make no mistake, to hear Jesus referring here to one group in three different ways. Jesus may be referring to office bearers as prophets, righteous men, and little ones. But that would make this passage somewhat strange. And it seems far more natural to hear Jesus referring here to three groups of people. Prophets, or office bearers, righteous men, or godly Christians, and then little ones. Not little children, first of all, but probably it makes a reference here to the weak and the helpless in the church, to those who have no strength in themselves. Maybe they have physical or mental illness. Maybe they politically are in a minority status. Little ones are believers who have no power, you might say, in this world. And so, if understood in this way, Jesus is here not only telling us that we're supposed to listen to the elder when he comes to our house, or to the minister when he preaches the gospel, but also that we're to receive fellow believers, and especially then the needy ones, into our lives. And Jesus says, when we receive these people, when we receive these fellow Christians, fellow servants of God, then we receive Jesus and the Father. Yet having said that, we might ask ourselves, why? Why should receiving a prophet or a righteous man or a little one be so important? It's worth noting that the reason we receive these people is because of their connection to Christ. It's not just that we're nice to anyone and everyone, though indeed we should be, but in this text, it's not just general and random acts of hospitality that are being described. Jesus has a particular concern here and a relationship in mind. Prophets are servants of the Lord. Righteous men live for and love to serve the Lord. And little ones, says Jesus, if you receive them because they are my disciple, are connected to Christ. So when we are embracing the people of this passage, what we're embracing is people that love and serve the Lord in various and sundry circumstances of life. But the reason we welcome them, the reason we embrace them, is because they belong to Jesus Christ. And we're trying to live in service to the King. And because we're trying to live in service to the King, when He sends us somebody into our life, we're going to serve them as well. And indeed, Jesus keeps piling on the motivation for that very reason. In verse 40, He gives us all the reason we could want for why we should be hospitable, why we should be welcoming to guests within our own midst, to fellow believers. He says, when you receive them, you receive me and the Father. That should be all you need in order to be hospitable to those around you. But now Jesus adds even more. He says, if you receive a prophet, because he's a prophet, you will receive a prophet's reward. And if you receive a righteous man, because he's a righteous man, you will receive a righteous man's reward. And then if you show compassion and mercy, if you give of yourself to those who are weak and in need, then you will in no way lose your reward. Now think of what that means for a moment. Think about, for example, the great prophets in the Bible like Elijah and Elisha. Imagine the reward that the Lord had in store for these men. Remember, the reward here is not earned, of course, it is of grace. But nonetheless, God promises a reward to these men. Can you imagine what God had in store for Elijah, that great prophet of God, or Isaiah, or Jeremiah? Or think about what the godly man receives from God who devotes his life to the Lord. What will God give to him when that man enters into glory? Or think about the little one. Think about the one that is in need. And then you give, and Jesus says you will not lose your reward. What do you look forward to? What do you expect from God? What blessing does He have in store for you? Jesus says if you would retain those blessings, if you would receive those blessings, if you want to receive a prophet's reward, if you want to receive a righteous man's reward, if you say to yourself, boy, I hope God treats me the way He's going to treat Isaiah and Jeremiah and Ezekiel, then you need to receive them. Then you need to embrace them. If you want to retain your own reward, then you need to show kindness and mercy. And we need to hear the encouragement here. But Jesus says, when that knock comes at the door, and you don't know if you should answer it or not, just remember, by fulfilling my word, by living for me, I will bless you. We need to see that Jesus is trying to encourage us to be expressive in our commitment, in our fellowship with one another. Maybe we should ask ourselves why that is. Why do you think Jesus has to encourage us so much to be hospitable? Think again for a moment about Elijah and Elisha, the great prophets of our Lord. Imagine that Elijah showed up at your house today and asked, can I stay the night? Can I stay the month? Can I stay for a time with you? What would you say? Of course, you'd say, yes, right, it's Elijah. That would look good on your credentials, wouldn't it, if you could say that Elijah stayed at your house. But now live in the days of Elijah. And remember that Elijah was public enemy number one. That Ahab, what he wouldn't have done to kill this man. Are you willing now to take in that man of God? Or what about a righteous man, a fellow believer? No problem, right? I mean, which one of us isn't going to be nice to fellow believers? Remember what Paul says in Romans 5 verse 7. Very rarely will anyone die for a righteous man, though for a good man someone might possibly dare to die. Why is that? What's wrong with righteous people, do you think, that keeps us from wanting to die for them, keeps us from wanting to sacrifice our lives for them? What could possibly go wrong or be wrong with someone who loves the Lord and who's devoted to living in total surrender to Him? Well, sometimes a righteous man makes us feel inadequate, a little ashamed of our own lack of piety. Or think of the little ones of whom Jesus here speaks, people who are needy, people who are weak, people who are helpless in our own context. Let's think, for example, of Anchor Association. Are we willing to give a cup of cold water there? Or do we prefer out of sight, out of mind? Giving that cup of cold water, you know, taking a membership in Anchor Association, for example, requires sacrifice. And it can require a sacrifice you get nothing out of. That is, you may not get any recognition. You may not get a pat on the back. You might have to keep on giving and giving and giving. You see, Jesus knows how hard fellowship is, even among believers. He knows how hard it is for us, even to go outside of our comfort zone and to welcome that stranger in the church. Right? That one that comes and doesn't look quite right, doesn't sound like right. What do we do and how do we relate to that person that's a little more uncomfortable than we like to be? So Jesus piles on the motivation. He says, if you receive those people, you receive me and the Father. That should be enough for any of us to welcome people over to our house for coffee. But if that's not enough, if you receive these people, says Jesus, not because of how good they are or how beneficial they are to you, but because I sent them, because they're a prophet, a righteous man, a little one in need, because they're fellow servants with you in need of grace, I will ensure that you get also their reward. Why is the Lord piling on motivation? It's almost like the Lord thinks that this is something hard for us to do and that we're going to be hesitant to fulfill it. It's almost like He knows how hard it is for us to to be sacrificial in our service to others. Just keep in mind the context in which we find these verses. Jesus has just finished saying that because of his presence, because of his message, and because of his ministry, division would come into the lives of his people of the most intense kind. Families would be ripped apart. Natural and intimate relationships would be lost. And community would be shattered. Now, some of us do know what that means. We know the earth-shaking consequence of committing our lives to Christ. Whether we experience it immediately or not, we find ourselves slowly drifting away from the places and people we once found familiar, and we find our world radically altered, our commitment to Christ requiring of us a great surrender. And it's a frightening thought. It's a lonely place to be. And nobody wants to be lonely. We are social creatures, created to love and to be loved. And when we give our lives to the Lord, when we walk in His way, loneliness can sometimes seem as though that's the result. And what Jesus says here to His followers, what He says here to all who commit themselves to living for Him, and what He calls all who commit their lives to Him to do, is to recognize that truth and to embrace each other, to fellowship with each other, and to be bound to each other in Christian love. And what a powerful witness this would be. What a powerful testimony this is, even in the world in which we live today. In the days in which Jesus was living, it would have been a powerful testimony. All of these people, all of these different people, united in one, blessed, serving, rich and poor, slave and free, all alike, living in service to the Lord. And what a powerful witness this would be also in our world. Oh yes, to fulfill this call, we must sacrifice what we hold dear in our life. But we're not the only one. There are other fellow believers who are just as committed to Christ as we are. And from this group of misfits and ne'er-do-wells and unlikely brothers and sisters, Jesus says, I'm going to create a community. Yes, you're going to lose the world and you're going to lose its familiar ways and its familiar friends. But, says Jesus, here is going to be a new community, a new body, a new fellowship. Not a community based on merit. We're not all professional athletes or celebrities. Not a community based on ethnicity. We aren't all Dutch. And not a community based on our own worth. We're not all able. No, the community that Christ establishes is a community based on Christ, on His saving power, on His unifying grace, and on His sovereign will. A community where He unites all who believe in Him. And isn't that wonderful? And don't we need that community? A place where we're received, not because of what we've done, but because of what Christ has done. Although we don't always experience it, do we? Some of us, even members of this church, are very lonely. We suffer, we struggle, we stand out, and we sorrow alone. We live in a world of loneliness. We live in a world where isolation is our reality. And that's not good. That's not good for us or for our fellow man. We need a place where we can be received, not because of who we are, but because of who He is. And it is then, it is in that context, it is in that environment that we need to hear again Jesus' words. He who receives you, receives me. And he who receives me, receives the one who sent me. Do you see why the Lord promises such wonderful blessings? And do you understand now why the Lord piles on encouragement after encouragement? Our natural inclination is to be alone, to be isolated. Sin does that to us. But the grace of God works in us a fellowship, and through that a solid and stable and secure community. So, we might not have itinerant preachers coming through town who need a place to stay tonight, and we might not have righteous men in our community who are visiting our church for the day. And we all might be thankful for the welfare state that takes care of the weak and the frail. But that doesn't mean we don't have work to do. Right here and right now, Jesus says, stick together, embrace each other, and in a world of isolation, receive one another, and I will bless you in all that you do. Amen.